So this is a podcast for Somerset House Studios explaining the aims of Anabasis to Dora, which is a expeditionary project visiting infrastructural sites in and around London which carry out services essential to the smooth running of our city. I'm Eloise. I have a studio here at Somerset House. Well, we're not here now.
So we're going to start at Beckton and then we're going to go to two above ground pumping stations.
Today we've been to two sites. One is Beckton, which is an active site, which is the largest sewage treatment works in the whole of Europe. And we've also been to Crossness, which is a Victorian pumping station, not in use. I've put together a group of people to come and look at some sites that are functioning in contemporary life, dealing with utilitarian aspects. I think that there could be and there should be perhaps a greater exposure to some of the sort of some of the sewage halls and the caissons and the large scale sublime spaces that are necessarily kind of part of servicing a city. People are very used to and accepting of kind of skyscrapers that ascend, you know, millions of into the air by many meters. But there are plenty of axes on which to encounter the city. You know, one of them that I'm very interested in is the subterranean, and especially in relation to the river and the kind of geology of the river, because I think that the kind of subterranean, the below ground excavations often have a kind of supporting role for the sort of above ground ambition, but in and of themselves they don't quite behave as well. You know, it's very much part of sort of this project is kind of considering the kind of subterranean as sort of resistive and kind of, you know, not a space where a bunch of things kind of collide at once, which is, you know, part of our kind of above ground experience of London, that we're just absolutely sort of surrounded by incoming things, visions, light, technology.
Wow.
So the whole site is automated, largely? Wow. Or?
Large extent of the site is automated, yes. Wow. So it's monitored from here 24/7. There's somebody 365 days a year.
So I got an invitation from Eloise to as part of her ongoing series of tours on the Anabasis to Dora. It's an amazing site. It's huge. It's like 150 acres of sewage treatment plants, and then we've seen where the sewage comes in and how it's kind of the sort of first screening process where big large matter is taken out of it, everything from bricks and shopping trolleys to sanitary pads and wet wipes to just general sand and grit that falls into the sewage, all quite non-chemically. It's all about sort of using the natural biological processes and sort of making it accelerating those in some ways. So you go through the sort of the sediment treatment process and then into kind of aerating the sewage to sort of dissipate the ammonia content, and then doing another round of sort of sediment treatment before it finally goes out into the river. It's pretty extraordinary. Like, there's parts of this site which are really old, and then most of it looks like it was built in the sort of post-war brutalist style. So there's sort of a massive concrete sort of structures that make you feel like you're in some sort of war zone, and then a whole bunch of new things. It's just like being in a place where you never have access to, but also that you never think about. You know, it's kind of who thinks about anything to do with, you know, what happens when you flush the toilet?
You know, if you're interested in wildlife, you know, you might see that because the ground is so fertile there's different types of wildlife, you know. But if you're interested in cofferdams and engineering, you might understand that some of the ways of that there are sort of strange meniscus effects where the water is pouring over something, or the way that they build the troughs, some of them are rectangular, some of them are cylindrical, so that the kind of mechanisms of aeration or removal or scraping can be kind of more easily done. And then if you're interested in architecture, you might see different architectural tropes. So you'll have a kind of these administering buildings, the brutalist ones. Then you might have more like, call them kind of agrarian because they look like sort of modern farm architecture. So in these kind of roof plastic roofs that they've built over the sewer cover roofs, when you kind of encounter a site that's got a really particular purpose, and then you see just how detailed that is, so that there was like a library that literally just have volumes on like sludge, and like that must be a material or a liquid that's kind of completely particular to like sewage treatment works. Like, we don't really even know what it is, sludge. It's sort of, but if you're working in the recycling waste industry, you're probably very familiar with that. Things like desalination or like pelletizing, or like, you know, you start to understand. And I mean, this is not simply kind of a byproduct. I mean, people's whole sort of lives, livelihood, careers are kind of based around these, the sort of ways of, yeah, waste removal and stuff.
So every morning, every weekday morning, I have a meeting here at 7:30 where we review the huddle board.
It's all updated this morning.
So we go through all the primary data statistics, look at our targets,
because there's a kind of a utility, or there's a set of operations that are being enacted at Beckton or in a subterranean infrastructural site. There's a sense that everybody there is playing a part, and also in a way some of the machinery or the mechanics of the site can kind of dwarf the human operators, and that's something that's probably quite distinct to the kind of modern day, because we've kind of built these rather like superhuman machines.
So I manage the sewage work side of the thing, basically the whole bit that we saw today. I manage under direct reports. I've got 13 direct reports, and the team as a whole, there's 54 people. So we have a team of, they're called day workers. They do all the non-technical side of stuff, so all the cleaning, the resetting. There's a team of technical people who are maintenance engineers who fix things, take out pumps, replace pumps, all of those sorts of things. I've got a management team under me, and I liaise quite closely with the manager of this process and the manager of the thermal hydrolysis plant, so we have to work together. Everything comes to the works first, and then it's distributed to what I see as my customers, which is here in thermal hydrolysis, and the rest goes out to the river clean and safe.
Dina was really impressive, and she sort of said better than me that the thing that she really enjoys about the job is just providing an essential service and doing it well and working, you know, within probably quite tight time frames to deliver to her service. And she's managing a large team, all men mostly, and I think that there's an aspect of that I find interesting.
My name is Petra, and I'm the learning and outreach officer at Crossness Pumping Station. Crossness Pumping Station is the southern outfall of Joseph Bazalgette's Cross London drainage scheme, built in 1865.
Neat and finished and complete. And what I liked about this is just like it's a grubby old site. And it's never gonna be finished. This is never, this is gonna go on forever. So it's work in progress, and that's
part of this is for me to experience is about a kind of slightly romantic notion of playing the host, and somehow some of my artwork, the things that I was encountering, they were sort of for me inflected with a mystery and a kind of sense of the mystery and joy of encountering them. And I think that that's something that you can only really have if you have somebody else with you, or somebody in mind, or somebody, you know, and so that's why I wanted to put in motion a system where I could kind of, in a way, open up some of that to other people and try to experience a sort of group dynamic, and in a group dynamic to have as many diverse people as possible, but all who have in one way or another an interest in this kind of thing. So on this trip we have a musician, we have a writer, we have some artists, architects, different ages, different moments, all together, and everybody will have quite a unique way of responding.
Probably first came an interest in shit, and then that probably preceded my interest in architecture. And then the two sort of happily collided while I was studying for a master's in architecture. I'm interested in the process, but then what the public, and that's what I explore in my, or I explored in my design thesis, was the potential of exposing the public more to this world, this unseen world, and trying to use what is a very neglected and undesirable resource and try and find a way in an architecture that can demonstrate how that can be used productively. So whether it's as a fertilizer or to make to make clean water, which then can become like a beautiful thing that you swim in, or it is a fountain, and showing the potential to, I don't know, to kind of view sewage and shit in a different way, because we're so estranged from it and so averted to it.
All right, go and gather around, guys. I'll tell you a bit about it. Okay, so this is the unrestored end, as you can see. This is really how it was discovered in the mid-1980s. It would have had a thick layer of dust, pigeon droppings, and God knows what on top of it. It had been left abandoned, as I said, for some years.
I do believe in my kind of idea of an artistic practice is very much in one that kind of looks outwards at the kind of world at large, whether that's through kind of trying to find materials that have practical uses in urban environments, so, you know, as opposed to sort of canvas and paint, working with things that have a kind of preordained sort of utility, like, you know, that's always been at the heart of like different types of efficient industrial plastics, and that's always been at the heart of my work. And at one point, you know, sort of following that through to its extreme, you know, accessing or getting hold of these did actually quite genuinely bring me into these sort of rather different contexts. And then I thought that shouldn't be kind of secondary or second fiddle to just making a sculpture. In fact, sort of having, you know, witnessing how materials are deployed in real life scenarios it can be a very rich
people
experience.
Like yourselves can come and say, oh, this is what you had and this is what you've got. You can see the change, you can see the work that's been done. A lot of the film companies have come down here and perhaps lots of money to use our space, like the rusty, and they like the decayed in it. It's a great backdrop for all kinds of things. It's been Parisian nightclubs, it's been Frankenstein's laboratory, it's been all sorts of things. In fact, that cupboard in the corner there was actually one used in the Frankenstein movie. If you've seen the Victor Frankenstein film, the creature comes out of that, the Book of Ice, and that's just how it comes out. So there we go, a little movie star in the corner there.
What we know is that these weren't wholly, a sewage work, a pumping station. These are not kind of sites that are designed for people to go and visit. So, you know, why they should have these kind of rich fronts and kind of might be a compensatory measure in Victorian times to kind of euthanize their function as cleaning houses for shit. Might be because in Victorian times there was this kind of great era of engineering, and there was this sense of kind of nobility and of all the sort of the fact that there was a lot of rather romantic on the surface in one sense projects. So I say romantic because they tend to have a figure like Brunel Bazalgette sort of spearheading, and he tends to be an old man that's labouring with a vision. Crossness is interesting too because it was derelict for many years, and then I think that almost like a sort of a band of explorers were kind of working their way through the land, and almost, I mean, the way it was told to me, the story, where they almost like came across it, sort of like, you know, knocked on the door, sort of vaulted through a window and like saw this kind of giant rusting kind of carcass of the pumping station, and then piece by piece painted it and kept it up, and that's interesting. When I was last there, you don't have to travel that far to get sometimes a more far-reaching sense of how things are put together. Or it is really, it's important that people see, and I think anyone that comes on the tours would agree that it's absolutely worthwhile and incredibly valuable to see places like Beckton. And you know, I, as an artist, I feel like I want to look out as much as possible and to kind of take from the world and be involved in the world and understand what my artistic identity might be in relation to kind of the world as much as possible.